Hello, welcome to the Lately in JavaScript podcast hangout. This is episode 76, and I have here with me, as always, Artur Sozinc. I don't know if I'm getting some echo here due to some communication with Artur. Hello, Artur.
Is it How better now?
I don't know. I position my microphone to change to see if it is causing the problems.
I can hear it normal without problems.
Okay. That's good. So we are here to talk about JavaScript, and there are several interesting things that happened recently and that we are going to comment. Let me share the screen here so we can review the topics quickly. This one. Is it this one? Is it okay?
Yep, I see it.
Okay, first we are going to just to mention that JavaScript will finally get proper asynchronous programming with async that is getting to the different platforms that on which JavaScript is available. Then we talk about a service mocker, which is basically a way to test service workers without having a server. Then we talk about something that may be nice that can be used to format the output of console log, at least I guess this is in Chrome, using CSS and the template tags. Then we talk about a way to implement async and await with generators and promises. And then we will talk about using JavaScript without loops, I mean, without having to manually iterate over elements of arrays, collections, using different JavaScript constructs. And then we have an article about native ECMAScript modules that can be used to dynamically import those models. So you do not have to load them at start time. You can load them dynamically later.
And it can only you can even load only parts of it, not all.
Yeah, that's always interesting. And then we have an article on JavaScript startup performance, how it works and how it can be done to somehow optimize and minimize the startup. Then finally, we have a nice, interesting solution for augmented reality for the web using AR toolkit. So going back to the initial topic, we are going to just to mention briefly that finally different JavaScript implementations on different environments, the browser, Node.js, and maybe others, are getting support to async and await. That is not a new thing, but it has been specified for ECMAScript 6 and now is finally getting to real implementations on browsers. So you can use it for whatever applications it may be useful. Artur, I know you use Node.js a lot. Are you using already async and await, or maybe you are awaiting for the async?
Awaiting, yes, for the async. Yeah, I'm awaiting for the async. I think last week, not in March probably, but still even February, Node.js released version 7.6, which included first release, which included async and await. I don't think it's still LTS version, so we are not switching to it, but yeah, the ones who wants to try, they can upgrade to it and experiment with the feature.
But do you want to try, or you are just waiting for the sync?
No, I don't know. I am excited for this feature, and I think this would be one of the features that I would be using apart from others that I don't really use a lot, like arrow functions. But I'm not eager to start. It's okay where I am when it comes it's tested. When it comes to more general acceptance, I will use it. Yeah.
Yeah, you prefer to deal with callback hell.
It's not hell.
It's just callbacks.
If you divide everything normally in modules and separate modules, it's usually okay. There's not lots of a problem.
Yeah, you don't see lots of callbacks being called inside callbacks.
Or use promises.
Yeah, that's one way to fool yourself out of confusion. And well, I think this is a very good thing, and it took a while to be implemented. It's not a new thing, and it is interesting that I found about the sync and await not in JavaScript but in the Facebook hack, which is their own PHP version. So it's an advanced PHP done Facebook, and one of the things that they implement is async and await, and that is great because all these things make developing code that needs to run things in parallel without having to use threads. Finally, you can take full advantage of the resources of your machine and do something while you are waiting for operations that block your process, and maybe actually finish tasks quicker. So when you send queries to your database, maybe the queries are slow. Maybe you can actually do other things in parallel while your database is working. So it takes a more extensive advantage of the machine resources. So moving on to the next topic, this is something that I have not yet used, but it may be interesting when you want to implement service workers. How do you test them? Usually you would need a server, so with this package you will not need them because you have a service mocker that you can try. Arthur, have you ever already used service workers? Or this is more for a browser thing?
Yeah, probably more a browser thing. But here I think service workers are used to emulate, to use service mocker to emulate API. Oh my God. Service worker, service mocker, two similar names.
Yeah. Well, I haven't used, I cannot tell by experience, but I think this may be interesting for you to test things.
Yeah, actually, I'm now reading it, and I think that for testing API, it could be probably used. For testing clients, like testing SDK, this could be used. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, moving on to the next topic. This is something interesting, not that we could not live without, but it is useful, which is basically a way to format your output to the browser console log using CSS and the template tags. And well, not that I would like to make output nicer, but sometimes it helps to show certain things in a different way. So when you are looking at long messages on the console log, you can find them easily. So it is interesting. Basically, this is a video, I think, of how this works. We are not going to show all the video, but it will be published in the show notes. So whoever is interested can take a look.
Yeah, just an example on how to change the cover is enough to wow me. It's really look great. I did not know about this feature, and here to see what else we could do.
Yes, that is nice. Okay, so moving on to the next topic, again, async and await, but this time implemented with generators and promises. This is a bit weird because if ECMAScript 6 implements async and await, why people want to emulate it with generators and promises? I suppose
ECMAScript 7, I think ECMAScript 7 implements a thing in a way. And
oh, is it really?
Yes.
So I'm confused.
ECMAScript 6 was 2015. No, I started really exactly. Messing them. Yeah.
Yes, I no longer know who is what. But basically, I think they mean that they had generators and promises first. So while you don't have async and await,
yeah,
I would say it is for ECMAScript 7, you can emulate them. But, well, generators is already a complicated thing to understand. But, okay.
Promises too.
Promise, not so much. You can understand that promises are callbacks. Splitting true and false.
Oh, you did not see some of the code that I saw that new programmers okay. use with promises, like with spread operator and oh my god. Oh, but okay, not
okay.
about that.
I don't want to know.
Yeah,
my life is already complex enough. but I can imagine that if you give rope, people will hang. they'll get buried in complicated matters to the point that they don't no longer understand the code that they have just written. But okay, never mind. Anyway, moving on to the next topic. This is a lighter topic, JavaScript without loops. It's basically probably a reminder that say that instead of using loops to iterate over arrays or strings or things like that, you could use several things that exist on the language that do the actual iteration for you. And well, it's a little nicer. Probably makes the code more readable. I don't know. What do you think, Arthurs?
It's really hard to say. I sometimes use loops, I sometimes use iterators, but I know there should be a pattern why I use one or the other, but I can't distinguish it right now.
Well, I use loops when for some reason I need the position in the loop. So I use the variable of the loop to say, oh, I'm position 0, I'm position 1.
True. Also, if you need to break out of it earlier, you can't use relay, I think, at iterator. Or can you?
Oh, I think you can. I think okay. If you use break, it will end the loop, no matter if you are in the middle. What may be hard is to iterate over things that are in callbacks. Hard not. It's not hard, it's impossible, because the callback is a different context. So
unless you use arrow functions.
I don't know.
Because they repeat same context.
They rebind the context, but if you want to break out of loops from a callback, I don't think you can.
Oh yeah, that's what I said. That's probably you can't do that.
Yeah. Anyway, this is an article about that. So moving on to the next topic, where just to mention that thanks to the possibility to have import modules in the newest ECMAScript versions. Now you can do things like importing modules dynamically. I mean, you just import the modules when you want. Maybe you can import modules depending on modules that are available, for instance, in a certain directory. I don't recall any other purpose for using dynamic models. Arthurs, have you ever used dynamic models? I mean, models that can be loaded dynamically?
Not specifically, but I use lots of libraries, and many of them already switched from require to import. And it allows a couple of advantages, like especially if you need to do some operation, like either long synchronous task or some asynchronous task with a callback, then you either would need to do some initialization through require module and stuff like that. But here it just returns a promise and you know when it's ready and you can use it. Or you can export different parts like separate functions and then import only the ones that you need from the module and stuff like that. But specifically, we are not using it in our project yet.
Yeah, well, I think dynamic modules have a purpose that may not be something that makes sense for everybody. But what would be a good use case of modules? I think, for instance, if you have plugins that are in a certain directory, that's me guessing a good use of modules. I don't know, what do you think? But you could scan a directory and
pull a module
depending on what the user has chosen.
Yeah, sure, but I don't think that's related. Really, you would need to do the same thing with import and with require. You would need to scan the directory and load all of them dynamically in this way. I think in this way, dynamic, it more means when it has a synchronous operation with a callback, then you don't have to like do anything specific. You just get the promise, and when it's resolved, you execute the next code and stuff like that. So it's dynamic in that sense, not the dynamic in file name sense, because you can, it's a string that you pass to it. You can use a variable there. And
are you saying that you cannot import a module with a dynamically defined name?
Yes, like, you can. Require or import it.
What do you think? For instance, let's say if you have an application that you have different drivers, let's say generating a video and MPEG, MP4, or AGI, and you add different modules that you will only load when they are needed. So it would be like deferring the loading of a module until it is necessary. That's the thing that I see as a good use case.
Yeah, I think that suits for both require and import. Yeah, while there was a standard that you should require all your modules at the top of the file before using, and it was a bad practice loading them dynamically, as you said, I don't think the import has that issues. So,
yeah.
Partially, well,
it's different from required. I just mean that now you can use import for that. Yeah. Okay, moving on to the next topic. It is about JavaScript startup performance. Well, this is a long article.
With lots of pictures and graphs and data.
Which is always nice. it talks about what are the reasons for bottlenecks that you may have in your applications. It talks here about mainly about web applications. And depending on the device, you can have different response times. So in certain devices, it can be very slow. So it is good for you to optimize the performance of your startup process, even if it is deferring slow things that may do not have to happen exactly at the runtime. You can do them asynchronously. So your application does not leave your user waiting. That's what I got from this article. It is quite long. It talks about the different things, about what happens during the startup process. And I think this is quite interesting if for some reason your application has become so complex that it needs to load a lot of things. And here it says web applications. I wonder if for mobile this is a concern also, because nowadays many people are developing mobile applications using JavaScript environment, and there is certainly an overhead, probably not the network overhead, because many of the JavaScript code is already in the device, but I think this is probably worth taking a look, because there is probably a lot to say about things that can be optimized or not. I don't know what is your experience, because you probably seem to have been working less in web, more in Node.js. So
yeah,
I don't know how much of this is your concern these days.
Not much.
That's what I suspect.
Yeah, so we have a single page web app, and okay, it loads longer, but it's a single page. You don't refresh it. It's okay. It's a dashboard, so I think it should be like that. But yeah, as you say, the most common problem is the parse and compile time of the JavaScript now, and they're optimizing it on the engine level. And really, this article describes lots of problems, but I don't see lots of solutions here.
Maybe they are telling you what hurts, and so you can decide what you could skip, and if you can skip, maybe certain things that are loaded at the runtime do not need to be loaded there. And it also tells you about how to figure what is slowing down things. Now there are those objects to measure performance, right? They are built in browser. We mentioned last month, I don't know, it says device timing tool. Well, lots of things here. Anyway, moving on finally to one last topic, that is about efficient augmented reality for the web using AR toolkit. I found this pretty cool, and I'm even going to play a small video that is just 27 seconds because it's just one character of Minecraft waving, but for some reason it appears on the device and it is not really there. Oh, how did they make that trick?
I can show you. I can try to show you the same trick. I think I already experimented with them. Yeah. So I don't know.
Do you have to show the real device?
Yeah. Do you see my screen? I don't know. On my screen. The same GitHub page shows you two links. One is the marker with hero written in it, and the other is for your phone to visit. So you visit it, and you put it on the marker, and it shows you this rotating 3D figure.
Oh, I see. So how do they do that? Do you need to run a special application on the device?
It's a web page. It's a browser, it's a web page. Just you access it, it asks you for the camera access. So you access it, and then they have OpenCV like something, or maybe they're using OpenCV library to parse, to see. So you expect marker to be square. It's always a square. And why? Because when you tilt your device to one or the other, it distorts. It's not a square anymore. You see like a trapezium or something like that. And that's the way you know from which angle to draw the 3D figure. And so that's how they mostly do that.
Yeah, so it's pretty cool. What about applications for this? You are a professional gamer, right? So
maybe game developer, but not really a gamer.
So you are not the player. You are the game owner.
Yeah, something like that.
It's more comfortable.
I play a little too, but not that much.
Yeah, maybe it's like being God. I'm God now, and everybody else is the medium.
No, it's more like a shoemaker. He always has the poorest, the most worn shoes because he's working on other shoes and not ever fixing himself. But yeah, maybe. Applications, sure. Apart from funny apps, I don't remember I've seen anyone. There was a Sphero robot kind of rotating, and you could play different games. Like because it was really moving in AR, you would really have interesting games with it, like really interactive. But other than that, apart from fun project, I really don't see much use case of the real world. Advertising, yes, something like that, but
I was giving you the chance to mention Pokemon Go, but you somehow evaded.
Yes, true, maybe. In games, virtual reality, I think, is more...
Did you ignore it on purpose, or for some reason you do not remember that about it?
No, I am actually playing Pokemon Go, but I disable augmented reality camera usually because it's more of a nuisance than a feature, I think.
So are you saying that it doesn't have that much use for games? It's more like when it's new, it's nice to see, but then it loses interest?
Well, I think it's in combination with virtual reality, with the glasses and the gloves. If you have something like that, it could be something more like Google Glass, I think, was a good example of augmented reality with your glasses, that everything you see, it would just, I think there was an interesting app that you could see a different buildings and it would fetch the information from Wikipedia and display information about the building. Well, this kind of augmented reality is nice, but this 3D figures is just for fun.
Yeah, I tried the Google Glass like in 2013, and I even made a joke video with it. But that's because they were not giving the glasses, but just letting you try. Well, like 2013 when I visited Google, and I don't know what would be the virtual augmented reality applications for Google Glass, because it's the glass. Actually, you're seeing the reality in your eyes, not in the glass.
Yeah. First one is, as I said, fetching additional information about the object. Second one is runtime translating text, replacing the letters that you see with the letters in your language, with words within your language, and stuff like that. That's really useful.
So those would be applications that you would have to be installed on the glass, right?
I think so, yeah. I think Google bought WordLens that does this, so they are thinking about something like that. I don't know. I think Glass project is actually abandoned because of the privacy issues and stuff.
Yeah.
But all we know, they're doing something interesting. I think it's already available actually on Android, something like that. You can translate text for camera runtime.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but it was pretty cool when it was new, but if you don't see applications, probably it's not a big deal. It's okay.
That's still interesting.
Well, when it is new, it's interesting, but after you try it, personally, I did not imagine myself using a Google Glass, especially in an environment that nobody is using the same thing. So I would become a target of the robbers, especially in Brazil. And if I appear with one of those glasses nobody is using, this, oh, he's just a snob.
True.
So don't. but I never got to the point to see any real applications. I think those appeared later. So I missed something that was probably nice. But then Europe came in and said, oh, you cannot take pictures without people permitting. Oh. It spoils all the fun.
They gave up too easily, I think, but yeah.
So I guess it's more in Germany, right, that they have those laws that stop.
Yeah. Google Maps, I think they needed to cover so many, the maps, the street view needed to cover so many objects that they just deleted some regions completely.
So they don't have surveillance cameras?
It's hard to say, because they have, but you need to register it. I think you have a dash cams on the cars too, but again, there are some regulations and
I guess you probably are not allowed to publish the videos on.
Yeah, they should not be public.
You need surveillance cameras. Now we are going to talk about the Innovation Award winners and nominees of I think December, although the results for the whole year already come out. Last month we recorded a separate show with the winner of the PHP Innovation Award, Christian V, that came and talked about his work and why he works a lot, not just to win the award, but develop great components that he uses, many other people use. And every month he has a bunch of PHP components to publish and update. But his favorite is the PDF one, the PDF to text one. it does lots of things.
Favorite and popular, most popular probably.
Yeah, it's getting very popular, and you can see by the number of support threads. Anyway, we are here to talk about the nominees first of JavaScript. Arthur, which ones would you like to comment?
Okay, let me first do the compartilhartela.
Oh, you are saying it in Portuguese?
Yeah, I copied link from you. So everything is in Portuguese right now.
Don't ask me why this happens.
Foca esta compartilando sua tela.
You can change URL at the top and reload the page.
Yeah, it will reload the Hangouts now. I'll just ask you if I don't understand something. So can you see the screen?
Yeah.
Great. So the package that I want to comment on, JavaScript, JS classes, is JavaScript Descriptive Statistics. It's rarely we see something like this, but it's really interesting package. And first one, probably need to tell what descriptive statistics here is. And basically, it's a statistical analysis of the data you provided, but in a sense that it provides some kind of summary, summarize the data, not like learning about it and doing some assumptions, but rather just go through it and summarize some, doing some summarization to know about this data. Like here are the provided examples, like you can get arithmetic average of all the values here, so sum it up and divide it by the count and stuff like that. And this package was developed by Miguel from Venezuela. Let me see, there are probably examples too.
Yeah.
Okay, there is no exactly like data to use. Yeah, there is a stat.js. But yeah, so if you need something like this, that you could use this package. And he did not choose any prize yet, or did not at all? Probably at all, I think.
But there is a small issue that is causing some delays, which is the way people choose prizes from O'Reilly. And to make it simpler, the O'Reilly provided a page for that, but it expired in December, so they need to renew it, and I'm still...
No, I see.
Well, they have some people waiting for their prizes. So I'm not sure if his prize was O'Reilly or he did not reply, because there are so many nominees, and that I would need to figure out what was his case. Just here. Okay, so on my behalf, I also would like to comment on a couple of packages, but first, let me...
Yeah, on your behalf, you should share a screen.
Yes, trying to find what is...
It's called compartilhartela, if you didn't know.
Well, that is the easy part. The hard part is to actually find how many of these bazillion windows that I am open, which one is the right one. So I think you are seeing it now.
Yep, I see it.
Okay, this one, JavaScript plot graph. A package from Leonardo Mauro Pereira from Brazil. Basically, it is a package that it can plot graphs in Canvas, but using a function, an equation could be something that you provide as a callback, and it will define the values. So could be a linear equation or not, could be something that you just define.
So it accepts x and y parameters and what you return,
yeah.
Whatever, and it draws the... Nice.
Could be random. And this is an interesting package because it allows you to visualize practically any type of graph, not necessarily something linear, as I mentioned. I was trying to see if there are any demos or screenshots which are always better, because sometimes looking at example code, it's not that easy. But you can see here that it is, it is a plugin. You can define a user interface. And if I'm not mistaken, this one is one that allows you to actually edit the let the user edit the values.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's okay. Why it's so complicated.
Well, for people that enjoy doing things like this, maybe it's not that complicated. Anyway, moving on to the next topic. The next package that I want to come, but not the next topic. Because as for the price, I'm still waiting. This package is called jQuery 2 Player plugin by Emil Kilaj from Sweden. And it is a plugin to dynamically embed YouTube videos. So you could use the YouTube API and embed it yourself, or you could use this plugin and dynamically make the player appear. So it is nothing hard to explain, but it is useful. It can also make it show the screenshots of images of the videos. So it can provide a different user interface that may be nicer than the actual traditional embed interface that people are using for YouTube. Anyway, this month there are only three nominees, and we already talked about the standings of the rankings for 2016 last month, because the 2016 has already ended, but so we can comment already on the 2015, 17. Oh, I think that the page is cached.
Yeah.
So I have to go there.
No, right, you were on 17. No, I think you were on 17. Yeah.
Yes, but the 16 packages that doesn't have 2017 links.
Yeah.
So for 2017, the rankings are only considered the nominees of January. So far, there are three developers: Titan first place, Emil Kilaj from Sweden, Martin Latter from the UK, and Martin Barker from the UK. Two Martins from the same country with one packet and 5 points. Then we have Till Wioski with one packet and 2 points, and Tom Loprod from Spain with one packet and 2 points.
Yes.
As for countries,
the two Martins from one country put this country in the first place.
Yes, that's what happens. And United Kingdom is first with two packages and 10 points. Sweden is second with one package and 5 points. Germany and Spain are tied with one package and 2 points. So since there are not many packages being published in JS classes, the rankings are more or less predictable. Anyway, basically, with this, we practically end this podcast, and I'd like to thank Artas again for coming. It's always interesting to exchange points of view about these new things in the JavaScript world this time. And on my behalf, that is all for now. Bye.
Bye.